Welcome to Recounting Encounters. This is D&D Encounters Season 18, Dead and Thay, and this is Week 9. We are without Mark this week. That guy is taking a much-deserved vacation in Trinidad. We are jealous, but we are playing D&D and he is not, so I guess we're not that jealous. And
perhaps jealous of us.
Yes. So this week it's just Craig and I, and we're going to let you know how things went. So, Craig, why don't I start? Because I know your story is probably a lot more exciting and interesting, and we'll save the good stuff for the end.
Indeed. But sounds good to me.
Before we even talk about that, let's take a couple of quick seconds and just acknowledge that the D&D starter set has been released. If you have the ability to go to one of the primary alpha, whatever they're calling them, FLGS stores in your neighborhood, they were on the shelf on July 3rd. And my set, I liked it a lot. I did a review. You can read it on dungeonsmaster.com. But Craig, what are your quick thoughts on the new starter set?
I liked it quite a bit as well. It's definitely very, very well suited to people new to the game.
Yeah, and I think that's been the number one thing I've been reading online, especially from all the other D&D gaming nerds like myself, is that it's hard for experienced players to really give a review of a starter set that isn't clouded by years of experience. So, but I'm going to echo what you said, and trying to look at it through the eyes of a new player, I think it's a fantastic product.
Yep.
Looking at it through the eyes of an experienced player, it's good, but I wouldn't necessarily give it the same high marks coming from that point of view. The adventure that's provided seems pretty solid.
Right, and I mean, considering it is aimed at the newer crowd, but of course it's going to appeal to the veterans alike as well.
Yeah, so I mean, for people who are completist elitists and must have every product that's ever been put out, paper, PDF, or otherwise, you know, I don't think you'll be disappointed with this purchase, but for people who don't need every single book, if you're an experienced player and you have every intention of buying the player's handbook, that might be a better route for you. The D&D basic rules are available online at wizardsofthecoast.com for free. So that should give you the fix you need for a few weeks until the PHB comes out, and then drop your hard-earned money and pick up that. I think that will be the where the real money is.
Yeah, and just a quick note, at least in my opinion here, if you are a completionist, like Derek was saying, you are going to get a pretty cool adventure with the Lost Mines of Phandelver. I think that's what the title is. It's a pretty decent adventure, and just if I compare it back to when the 4th edition launched with the Keep on the Shadowfell, this is a stronger adventure, and one that you could leverage quite a bit, I think, in the wait for the player's handbook and the updated basic PDF where they put out all the monsters and all that stuff, so.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I know that personally, it's unlikely my group is going to play that level 1 to 5 adventure from start to finish, but I do see a lot of stuff in there that I've already got inspiration to pull stuff out and use in a more personalized campaign. So, yeah, I think if you buy it, you won't be disappointed, but I think that the brand new players will certainly get more out of it. I would give it an A+ as a starter set for a new player, and maybe like a B+, A- if you're an experienced player. So still a solid review, a solid product.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so getting on to D&D Encounters, we are still using the playtest rule. So this was, again, a little side note here. We had a little bit of a debate among the DMs and the players. Now that the new rules are out, in some capacity, for some classes, some races, do we start enforcing the new rules immediately, or do we continue with the playtest? Now, some of the new rules are not that big a deal, and in my personal opinion, I think will improve gameplay. So the example I keep using is standing up from prone. In the current playtest version we're using, it's a move action. That's your full move, is to stand up. With the new rules that have come out, standing up from prone only costs half your movement, and then you could potentially still keep moving once you stand. I like that. I think it's an improvement. I don't think that would unbalance things to implement that rule right away. However, the what's the rogue one called?
The cunning action?
Cunning action, thank you. In the playtest rules, as a rogue, I can take my normal action, my move action, my cunning action, and if during my attack action I want to attack with the sword in my right hand and the sword in my left hand, I'm good to go. With the new rules, what are they calling that extra action now?
Bonus action.
Bonus action, thank you.
Yep.
You get one. So in that example, the rogue can either attack with his left hand, assuming he's right-handed, or use his cunning action. That, to me, is a significant change if you've been playing a rogue all the way up until now. It kind of seems unfair to suddenly make you change as you're coming near the climax of the adventure. So
Yeah, a lot of things got rolled into bonus action to sort of streamline and simplify it, I guess.
Yeah, and some, and we noticed a lot of the spells, the power, especially the healing type spells, have the power level has come down substantially.
Right.
So the general consensus was try to keep using the playtest through till the end of this particular adventure, so another 3 or 4 weeks. If some of these little rules come into play and there's an opportunity to not enforce, but to try the new one and it doesn't seem to break the game, go for it. But for now, we're going to continue running with playtest. And then once this season's over, the playtest will be forever, you know, in the past, and we'll move forward with the official 5th edition.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And for anyone out there thinking of possibly switching over, I mean, obviously it's up to every table how they want to play it, but you got to take a couple things into account. First of all, some people are playing classes that aren't officially in their final form yet, whereas some of them are, right? So, like, how do you make the difference up when it comes to some sort of complications that might arise out of that? But as well, some, like Derek was saying, some of the spells or some of the abilities have been changed a bit, right? So the big example I think here is Spare the Dying. If you took a cantrip for Spare the Dying, you no longer give them one hit point. It's only stabilizing a dying creature. So the original Spare the Dying, if someone's unconscious and making death saves, it's a cantrip. You can cast it and you make a that person regains one hit point, effectively bringing them back to the land of the conscious, getting back into the fight. Now you're not giving them one hit point. They're remaining at zero. They're remaining unconscious. You're just stabilizing them.
Yeah. So, and that's a pretty big change. And that's a pretty good example of why we don't necessarily want to switch with only a few weeks to go.
Yeah, because someone's probably picked it as a cantrip because of the utility of it, and now that its effectiveness has been drastically altered, but well, I wish I had a different cantrip in place of it.
Well, and I know at my table, we have a guy who multi-classed. He only took one level. He actually started as a level 1 cleric specifically so he could have that. Then he multi-classed into something else that has now become his primary class. And he even said, I would never have made this build if this power didn't work this way.
Right.
So, I think that's part of the reason they changed it was, you know, that they wanted to eliminate that cherry picking or at least make you really think hard about doing it.
Mm-hmm. And the lethality too of some of the spells, like for example the Wizard's Fireball, has been upped. So if you remember, my table had a TPK last week due to a couple of well-placed fireballs. Although it ended in TPK, it would have been that much more insulting to have added all those extra dice.
Yeah, no kidding. All right.
But anyway,
okay, so to quote Mark, we digress, let's continue.
Yes.
Onward. We're making Mark's contribution this week. We digress, let's go back into the review.
I almost thought for a second he was here.
Okay, so for those who may not have heard the last episode or who are listening for the very first time, my group last week spent most of the adventure using the Black Gates to teleport to various areas of the dungeon. And once they arrived in a new area, they used their glyph keys to make the Arcana check to disrupt the gates. What they've learned over the last few weeks is that in order to get to the final phylactery vault, where they anticipate they'll have the big climatic conclusion of the adventure, which, wink, wink, they certainly will, they need to disrupt a certain number of these black gates. There's almost 40 of them in the dungeon. They're guessing they need to do at least half. So that doesn't leave them a lot of weeks left to get this done. So last week, my group made a point, and that's all they did. They went from room to room to room. The monsters were secondary. The portals were primary. They managed to disrupt a whole bunch of them. I believe, Craig, correct me if I'm wrong, most of the tables this week, that has become their primary focus.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, so
everyone is well aware of that now, I do believe.
I believe you're correct. And from what I've heard from, because we touched base with the other DMs, is that, you know, we did a quick count at the end of this week, and it looks like we're certainly on track to hit the requisite number in time for the finale. So I was a little worried about that, but I think we're back on track. All right. So my group ended last week in the Far Realm Cists, which was an area that they had cleared like 3 or 4 sessions earlier. So they knew when they went back, they would have minor resistance, if possibly even no resistance. So they did a pretty good job. They avoided any significant monsters, and we picked things up there. They were in room, for those who have the module, it's room 41, which is the garbage transfer. It's a room full of skeletons, but the skeletons won't hurt you unless you attack them. The skeletons are literally just workers, and they separate all the garbage. And so the party took a few minutes to take a breather from there. They explored their map, because obviously all the players have a copy of the dungeon map. And then they tried to figure out where they could go to disrupt a gate where they figured they would not have too much difficulty or where they could at least have some fun. So they decided to go to the culling pens in the ooze area. The ooze grottos. Now, I did remind them that nobody in the party had been to that area of the dungeon yet, and they used their telepathic circlet to confirm nobody had ever been to that area of the dungeon. So as the DM, I cautioned them a little bit, just saying, remember how tough the rooms were in the first few weeks when you were going to unknown areas? That is the level of lethality you can potentially expect going into areas nobody's been before. They all nodded their heads and went, yes, we understand, and away they went. So they ended up on the map, which is room number 70, which is called the Battle Pool. Now, of course, they didn't know it was called the Battle Pool. It's basically you poured in, and there's this giant black, well, we'll call it a lake, for lack of a better term, and it looks like there's rough waves on it when there's no wind in the room. What it actually is it's like a giant pool of ooze. For Star Trek fans, it reminded me, the way they described it, Star Trek Deep Space Nine with the changelings when they're all in the great pool of ooze or whatever it was called. That idea where it's definitely a number of sentient beings that have come together to form this giant pool. And of course, there's a few red wizards that are keeping these individual beasts together in the pool. So the party shows up. They disrupt the Black Gate right away, which, you know, I'm very glad they did, because I knew this could potentially be a very tough encounter where they could either A, all be killed, or B, have to make a very hasty exit. So they spent the first round making sure they disrupted the gate, which they did. Then they spent the rest of the first round, for those who weren't disrupting the gate, and the second and third round fighting the three red wizards. Again, the party not realizing how deadly this room could be, the oozes from the pool start to, after the second round, reach out and come out of the pool as individual creatures. So things started to get pretty ugly pretty fast. The monk character in our party has an exceptional speed, and he was the only one who was able to run to the far side of the pool and engage the red wizard. Like, there were two apprentices and a main wizard.
What was the specialty of that wizard?
It didn't specify, so I made him a conjurer.
Yeah.
That seemed to make sense to me, because the way they described the pools was these were like summoned creatures or creatures that needed to be controlled. So that conjurer seemed to make sense to me.
Yeah, I don't think, as far as I've seen, they don't ever specify what kind of red wizard is where, and I've been trying to match them up to the zone they're in. That would make sense.
Yeah, that was my instinct. So the party had a few rounds of fighting against the apprentices and against a couple of these black oozes, and they were doing okay, but they all stayed grouped together except for the monk. So the red wizard is not an idiot, and he's got fireball in his repertoire. So if the party was dumb enough to stand together for two or three rounds, he's going to be smart enough to take advantage of that. He also knew they were messing with the black portal. Although we couldn't see what they were doing, he knew that's the only thing that was around the corner. So he basically just threw the fireball, hit the guys he could see as well as anyone around the corner. The party took quite a bit of damage. Now, we had a couple of brand new players. One of the guys was playing a rogue, and every time he had to make a saving throw during the course of this adventure, he rolled an 18, 19, or 20. So he, not only did he make saves, but because he's got the rogue evasion, he didn't take any damage from these fireballs. So he was like, yep, bring it on, next! Meanwhile, the wizard, we had two full-on wizards. They were failing their saves and taking maximum damage. It was crazy. They were just getting crushed. The monk had separated himself from the party. The wizard, after he cast his fireball, was like, yeah, I'm not sticking around to see how this takes on. So he runs away. What the party did not realize, right away anyhow, was the next room over, they could hear the sounds of combat, which I did describe when they arrived, because they all made perception checks. There are actually a whole bunch of red wizards and some dread warriors, and they're like fight. It's like battle school. They're fighting these oozes, and I guess it's like I don't know. They're just bored, so they're fighting the monsters. And the wizard who escaped went running into this room where all the bad guys were having a little boxing match, and he's like, "Hey, we've got intruders in the dungeon. We need help." And so two dread warriors sauntered over to where the party was. Now the party at this point is licking their wounds, going, "Man, we're kind of hurt. I hope nothing bad happens." up until now, the Dread Warriors they fought have only attacked with weapons, so they didn't think they would have much problem standing on the other side of the pool. This time, the Dread Warriors remembered, hey, we have spells.
Finally. Well,
the party was still grouped together. I'm like, okay, fireball number two. And sure enough, all the people that failed their save the first time failed their save the second time. So two unconscious wizards, two very hurt characters, and the monk who wasn't anywhere near either fireball, so he was good. At this point, they realize, like, we're in bad straits here. We're screwed. So the conscious characters grabbed the unconscious characters, brought them back into the Black Gate, and they teleported back to the garbage room. That they're now using that as their staging ground. And they were super hurt. Now, we have a guy who's a multi-classed into a cleric, so he used his healing spells to revive the unconscious characters. They had a bunch of healing potions, more than I thought they had in their inventory, but I'm glad they had them. They drank them as they could, and then they started talking about taking a short rest. And I said, well, the nature of this dungeon is such that you don't think you're going to get an hour to rest. They said, well, look at where we are on the map. There's one door and one black portal. We're going to bar the door from the inside. Therefore, the only way we should really expect problems is if something teleports in, and they would need a key attuned to this room. So we're going to risk it. Normally, I wouldn't allow this kind of thing, given that it's a multi-table adventure and everything's supposed to be happening simultaneously. But this party was so hurt, and this was a good idea, given where they were. I was certainly willing to allow it, but I told them, I'm going to keep rolling for random encounters, and they're like, we're okay with that. Now, one of the guys had a really good idea. He's got a rope trick spell, which basically opens an extra dimensional space that you can climb into for 1 hour and stay hidden. There is a chance it can be detected if a creature comes near it. But again, they said, let's climb, do the rope trick, climb into the space, rest up for an hour, and hope like hell nobody comes in the room, and hope even more that if they do, they don't see us. It made sense to me. It was a good plan. It expended a fairly high-level spell to do it. So I'm like, you know what? Let's see. They went in. I figured every 10 minutes, I'll see if there's a random encounter. I rolled 6 dice to see if there were. Nope, they got lucky. Not a single thing. So I gave them the benefits. They all spent their hit dice. Some of them got their spells back. They were very happy, and they thought, okay, now we're invulnerable. We're gonna go and try and disrupt another Black Gate. So they decided to go to the Blood Pools. Now, Craig, your group's been to the Blood Pools, haven't they?
They certainly have.
Why don't you remind us quickly how things went?
Well, the Blood Pools didn't go terribly. That's where they first encountered the Beholder.
Indeed. But the Beholder wasn't there anymore, right? He left?
Oh, yeah, he left. He was there, and then he was gone, basically. It was just... Because I remember in the middle of the fight in the Blood Pool, one of the characters climbed up the cliff onto area, which is 85 on the DM's map.
Yep.
But, yep, the cliff that overlooks it, and that's where he saw the Beholder come through. So it was sort of this moment for him at the time where he was off alone. He thought he was safe from all the monsters down there. And then, of course, he saw there was a Dread Warrior, but several skeletons, if I remember correctly.
Yep, that's exactly correct.
Yep, and then the Beholder showed up as well. So I was like, oh, man. Indeed.
So when my group... So I asked my group, I said, where are you going? And they're like, we're going to the Blood Pools. And I said, okay, well... You know, you've got to tell Bothic Circlet. Do you want to see if me... Because I knew your group had been there. So I didn't want to flat out say other people have been there. Right. So I sort of coached them in saying, why don't you ask the other groups where they are and tell them where you think you're going to go. And that way you don't waste time doubling up in the same section. Because I figured as soon as they said, where are you? The other group would say, we're wherever we happen to be. And then they'll go, we're going to Blood Pools. Somebody would have said, we've been there.
Right.
No, that didn't happen. Apparently, the group that had been to the Blood Pools, nobody thought to inform this party that they had already been there. So, my group shows up, thinking nobody's ever been here, expecting resistance, which they certainly found.
Yeah, so...
Go on.
And I can give a little insight into that, or we can save it for later.
Yeah, let's...
For when we get into mine, but just remind me about it.
Yeah, I will. So my group shows up, and sure enough, Dread Warrior and Skeletons chilling out. And now one of the guys is dressed in the Red Wizard's robes, and he doesn't... Like, they realize right away that the monsters don't attack, but the monsters are clearly intelligent and looking at them. So he tries a bluff check, and he's like... Yeah, there's been some shenanigans going on in the dungeon, and these teleporters have been disrupted, and so we're the repair crew. We're here to make sure the teleporter's working. So you just go about your business. We're just going to stay right here on the teleport circle, and we're just going to fix it. We're good. The direction for how to run the Dread Warrior, it gives very clear advice about, you know, if people come through and they're prisoners, he's going to let them go. But if they come through and they don't sort of follow certain directions, he's going to realize they're not who they say they are, and they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. And he you know, instructs his army to attack them, which is pretty much what happened. I mean, the idea from the party was good, but given this monster's intelligence, unfortunately, they were kind of screwed. So the skeletons all started coming at them, and, you know, they were like, okay, well, we know how to handle this. They did a couple of big spells, and they knocked a whole bunch of the skeletons out early in the fight, and that was great. But, you know, they didn't learn after fighting the last Dread Warrior that he still has magic. So they're all grouped together on the teleporter again, and there are still a bunch of skeletons alive, and so the Dread Warrior does a cloud kill, which is a poisonous cloud, which doesn't affect undead because they don't breathe and they're immune to poison. So he doesn't care that his dudes are in there, and he doesn't care that he's close enough to get it either. All the player characters need to breathe, though, and it does crazy damage. And sure enough, who fails? The two wizards again. Everybody else makes the save.
Yep.
So, I mean, I felt bad that the characters that were getting it kept getting it and kept getting it hard, but, you know, unfortunately, that was the way it is. Rather than get out of dodge immediately, they decided to fight for a whole round still before they realized, oh, we're going to take this poison damage a second time. Once the first couple of characters started taking it again, though, they're like, all right, I think it's time to leave. Again, they were very fortunate that the first guy through the portal, his first action was, I start disrupting the gate. And by the time his second turn rolled around, he had made the check successfully. So even though a bunch of the characters were again unconscious when they left, they did disrupt the portal. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Craig, did your group previously disrupt that portal?
They certainly did.
And my guys made no effort to try to figure that out when they arrived, because it does say you can detect it with the same check you would use to disarm it.
Yeah, but so, otherwise there's no obvious visual clue that it's been disrupted.
Exactly. So, after all the excitement died down and the party teleported away, I had to be the bearer of bad news and tell them, regrettably, you realized that when you went to deactivate this portal, it had already been done. They were super ticked off. And of course, the guy with the circlet went running over to the other table. Why didn't you tell me you had been there? Blah, blah, blah. So that was kind of funny to hear that they, you know, this was an opportunity where they took all this damage that they absolutely did not need to take because they did not need to go back to that room. But it's a good reason to support talking between the tables.
Indeed.
So anyway, they went back to the garbage room and tried to figure out where to go next. They were pretty ticked off that now they, you know, they've wasted all this time and resources. One of the guys in the party said, hey, I know a place in the Forest of Slaughter where there's a recovery pool, and if we go in there and we drink the water, we'll get the benefits of another short rest. Why don't we do that? And they all sort of nodded their heads and went, yeah, that's a fantastic idea. Again, good tactics prevailed for, you know, the second or third time this week. And they cast an aura of invisibility. And so as long as they stay within 10 feet of the caster, everyone stayed invisible. So they poured it into the Forest of Slaughter, or as we've started calling it, the Forest of S Laughter, because that doesn't sound quite as bad.
Exactly. And, special laughter.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, I've got a hard copy of the mod here. You can probably hear me flipping through the pages. I'm just trying to find the rooms. So anyway, they went in through the entry point in room 49, which is where some of these characters that I'm running the party for now, that's where they started. So we did 49 and 50, and then the pool is in 51. They managed to elude the monsters in those rooms, and actually in one of those areas, the monsters had been freed by another party. But again, no one at my table knew that, so they expected monsters to be there, so they made sure they were very quiet. Funniest line of the night, while the party is invisible, they're trying to very quietly decide how they're going to proceed, and they're like, maybe we should go here, maybe we should go there, and one of the guys says, okay, you know what, my idea is go here. Show of hands, who wants to come with me? I had to remind them they were all invisible. Show of hands wasn't going to help. And they all thought that was pretty funny.
That was really hilarious.
Yeah. So anyway, they made it to the pool unmolested. They drank the water. They got their points back, and then they decided that next week they're going to head to the Forest of Illusion. There's a black gate in there, and they're going to head through to room 48, which is where they encountered the Gorgons in the second or third week. It turned a couple of RPCs to stone. They're going to go through there because they know, hey, we've already killed the Gorgons. There's nothing in there can hurt us. And so we ended with them next to the pool. The pool of recovery, and we'll see where they go next week, see if they continue to stick with the plan.
Indeed.
And now, Craig, if I remember correctly, your group is in the Forest of Slaughter right now as well, right?
Yes, they ended up going to the Forest of Slaughter.
So tell us about that.
Well, let's rewind a little bit first. And actually, there's there's a couple of points where it intersects with what was happening on your table, and there's a couple points I need to make here about it too.
Okay.
The first part here, though, is that, again, like I've already mentioned for this podcast, that last week, if you've been listening to this podcast, then you probably remember we suffered our first TPK in our store in that. At my hands, basically. So the characters were making their way last week through the Golem Laboratories, had run into a couple of Red Wizards in the Stone Golem Quarries, and decided to take off down to the Iron Golem Foundries afterwards in hopes that they could head down through the Force of Slaughter, or of Eslaughter, to get to the Force of Recovery, because they knew that there was some sort of healing options down there. Unfortunately, they were run into again by another couple of Red Wizards who were made liberal use of their fireballs, and long story short, they all ended up dead. So coming into the store tonight, or you know, the night of the game, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what people wanted, or who was coming back with a zombie, who was coming back with a brand new character. All told, for most of the people showed up who was there last week, with the exception of one, but I knew she wasn't going to be there this week. All told, only one person chose to come back as a zombified character. Everyone else made new characters. Now, the benefit here is that a couple of the players had said that ever since starting Dead and Thay, they had regretted not having, like, for example, one of them really wished she had picked a mage at this point, because a lot of opportunities had come and gone to make use of Arcana, and we're having someone with our arcane knowledge would have been quite the boon, and this party has been sorely lacking in the mage department for the most part. We've had a couple of weeks where one of the players showed up as a mage, but beyond that, it's been completely lacking. So she came back as a mage. And we had a couple of other guys. One of them was a paladin bard combo. Another one was a ranger. We had a couple rangers, and we actually had a new player as well who showed up as a mage. Now, this guy had not ever played D&D at all before. He had no history with it at all, but he was familiar with computer RPGs, and you know, gave the example that he played World of Warcraft. So I said that's good, because I also am familiar with World of Warcraft, so it'll be a lot easier for me to relate some of the concepts and stuff that would make sense to him through that kind of reference. So, and he actually did great too, as you'll see shortly. But basically, to start though, I basically said, since we're really coming in with a almost a fully new group here, I gave him the whole, you know, Syriana greets you in the gatehouse. She gives you the background on what everyone sort of as a group knows so far. So a lot of the players, of course, already knew, but this is also a good way for me to catch up the new guy who had not been here at all for the season thus far. So I got him caught up on the story, and I basically left it to the players' decision. You can go wherever you want, although you have one corpse friend, and he would technically be in the Iron Golem Foundries. We can easily say that, you know, for example, the corpses were thrown into whatever area, that the players would have wanted to go, but they decided, you know what, we want to go back to the Iron Golem Foundries, because you know, they had an idea of going into the forest. Now, of course, now they don't need this healing, but they figured if they had the corpse with them, maybe they'd find a way to resurrect him. They really didn't know 100% for sure what they were going to find, but they knew they wanted to go into the forest. So that was it. Sights were set. And at this point, too, they're like, you know what? We really have to focus on taking out those Black Gates as well. We know some people have been through the forest, but I don't know what their Black Gate situation is there, so we really need to focus on just getting those done. So they met up with the corpse in the Iron Golem Foundry. So basically at this point, I had that the Red Wizards that were there previously had wandered off, because they were a random encounter last time. And my reasoning was basically that these Red Wizards were investigating possible changes to the Black Gates, and investigating intrusions perhaps into the Doom Vault that they've been sort of made aware of. So once they had killed this group, they would have only spent a little bit of time, going over everything there and moving on to the next area to see if they can find any more stragglers in the dungeon. So basically the characters came in, and the way I described it was that for the moment anyway, as far as they knew, no one was around except for a couple of corpses. One of them was there. The person who wasn't here has told me she plans to come back as a corpse as well, but in the meantime she wasn't here, so she just sauntered off to the corner But basically, the guy who was a corpse had decided, you know what, before everyone shows up, I'm gonna, my character is gonna take all the gold and all the, like, valuables from the other character corpses, whatever was left. Anything huge was, of course, not going to be there. But
that's actually a really interesting detail that I hadn't thought of.
Indeed.
I'm glad your guy did, because that's the kind of thing that later on someone's going to say, what happened to all my stuff?
Now, this is a very important point, too.
Yeah.
But this is a very important point that he also decided, you know what? I'm going to check the corpse of the player who had the circlet of communication. I'm going to take that. I want to be the one with the circle of communication. Now, this is an important point because this player I've referred to in the past, he's been one who has had a hard time paying attention between turns when it's not his turn, where he's been reading a book or he's been on the phone or something or the other, right? So a lot, some of the details have been... He's missed some of the details as we've gone through, but now he wants to be sort of the torchbearer for this. So I thought, great, this will be a good way to engage him and keep him sort of focused on that, right? So anyhow, they pick up the stones, do the whole sort of player character introduction thing, and then decide that, you know, let's move on, let's go on through to the next area. So he's also now the gatekeeper. He took the glyph key just for the sake of ease. I just said that the all access gate key was still available to them, just because, you know, we only have a couple of sessions left to do this. I didn't want to pointlessly delay them, because they're going to get it no matter what anyway from another table, right?
Yeah.
So they decide to move on down south into the Forest of Slaughter, and the first zone, of course, that they're greeted with is lovingly known as the Forest of Death. So, you know, the fact that they just came through, like, the player knowledge, they just came through a TPK, it wasn't exactly a good omen, right? So, but they decide to press on anyway. They come into this sort of a forested area that's all sort of gouged and burnt and relatively destroyed here. And it's a bit of a narrow-ish passage that opens up into a wider chasm, and a wider opening into this particular little forested area. And they note, the first thing they notice is two strangely shaped hills. And upon further investigation, they realize that they're looking at two scaly-looking hills. Two serpentine creatures, and I don't mean just like small. I'm talking like the description is that they're monstrous. They're huge, right? So they're bigger than the biggest creatures they've seen thus far that are coiled up, easily visible in the forest. However, upon further perception, that they were able to tell that they can hear sort of a rhythmic sort of breathing and a little bit of a snore. So, hey, they're asleep. Let's just move through here. Let's not screw around with this. Let's move just straight down. So the way this particular room is set up is that sort of this narrow passage where you enter in from the north, and then in that narrow passage there's also a south entrance as well into the next room, and then to the east of it, it opens up into a wider expanse. So it's really, they're not, unless they really try to wake a sleeping creature there, they're in pretty good shape to get around it pretty easily. However, they were rather concerned because, of course, they all died last week. So, we had our one of the characters in that. And I'm sorry, I can't remember who it is off the top of my head, but one of the characters had decided they had silence and they wanted to cast silence at a point closest to them. So, if they had to go near them, their sounds would be muffled, that would not be heard by the beasts. But ultimately, they'd say, you know, they're far enough away, I think we can just get by with just stealth checks. I made them all roll, but quite literally, it wasn't going to be a problem. So, and I even held them in suspense. I just waited for whoever got the lowest, and I described as everyone went through, and the last one goes through, and he steps on a branch on the ground that he didn't realize was there, and snap, sounds like it reverberates off the cavern walls, and everyone freezes in place. But nothing seems to happen. So they all breathed a collective sigh of relief, traveled down into the next room, which was the, I can't remember the name of the room, but basically it's another open sort of forested area. This time it's not burnt and destroyed or anything, but there is the interesting feature here is that there's a pool on the west side of this cavern that has a pale gray light that's coming from it.
This is the pool of consumption?
I don't think
the pool in this cavern glows with pale gray light. Yeah, this has got to be one.
Okay, could be the one.
Pool of consumption.
Area 55.
Yeah,
for those who have the mod there. But basically, the effect of this pool is that we had one undead character in there. So immediately I asked him, because I want to keep him engaged. This is the guy with the circlet again. So I asked him, please make me a wisdom check, a perception check. And he rolled pretty well. And so I'm like, okay, so you get this kind of welcoming, sort of inviting feeling towards the pool. And something about the pale gray light that's come from it is very, very calming and relaxing for you. I basically described, since you've got up as a walking corpse, you probably have a pressure or just this relative discomfort in your head, and it seems to alleviate the closer you get to this pool. And so he was very cautious about it. Well, everything in this dungeon seems to kill me, so I don't want to screw with this. So the other players were all curious. They're like, oh, do I feel? I'm like, nope, no one else did. If anything, you might notice that he seems preoccupied with it for the moment, but other than the fact that there's a pale gray light coming from it, you don't really notice anything about it. So the wizard, our wizard in the party now, had questioned him about what he was so interested in. He described what he felt, so she did a check, and she could tell that there was some necrotic energy coming from it, but she really wasn't sure of the nature of what would happen. But all she knew was that it was something that she wanted no part of, and most definitely no one here who's drawing breath should want any part of it. It is necrotic energy after all. He wasn't interested in investigating any further, so they decided, you know what, let's just press on. But one of the rangers in our party had decided they wanted to search for tracks and search for any signs of creatures, even if there's nothing in here, which there wasn't. They just wanted to see if anything maybe passed through or anything like that. So, knowing full well that in the room directly south, which is pretty much their only option at this point, unless they decide to backtrack further, there's three trolls in the next room down. So there's two male trolls and one female troll. So I basically, he scouted the perimeter of this area and looked all over. So I said, near the entrance to the next area, maybe you find like a bone that looks like it's gnawed on, and you can see a couple tracks that sort of venture into this area and back. So after a couple of checks, he was able to discern that it looked like they were trolls that are perhaps around here. So one of the rangers decided to use, I think it's is it Hunter's Veil? It's one of the abilities anyway, where they're able to make a +10 to their stealth checks or to their dexterity checks.
Yeah, something like that. We had one of our guys use that earlier this season. Yeah, it can be really powerful when used in the right circumstance.
Yeah, so they said, you know what, let's use that and let's just scout into the next room and see what we see. So they went into the next room and discovered that indeed there was a couple trolls near the center of the room. There's two males that seem to be fighting each other and a female lounging lazily next to one of the black gates. So they're like, oh, crap, well, we don't want to come in here and deal with these trolls. I mean, there's three of them here. We're going to have to find some sort of clever way around it. So the trolls were also talking to each other a little bit, and a couple of the characters, including the new character, the new guy that at our table, understood giant, and they were actually complaining about how hungry they were. They were just completely starving, and that's what they were. They were fighting sort of more roughhousing, but they were very irritated with each other, and then the female was just relaxing and taking it easy, but they were all complaining about how hungry they were. So they came back and they were deciding, oh, you know, what are we going to do? Ooh, we have to deal with this. But then one of our someone from another table came over and said, hey guys, guess what? We know, you know, because they had communicated a couple times before, we know you guys are in the Forest of Slaughter. We're just about to come in. We want to come down. We know there's a couple of sleeping Bahirs in one of the rooms. We want to take them out. Want to help us? So as it just so happens, because of the reference of the two creatures, the players immediately know, oh, but here's, is that what they were? Okay, so that means, I think you're coming into right where we're just south of that, so we can totally meet up with you guys. So they decide they want to come in and attack them initially. But then a couple of the, I know at the other table, a couple of the players are like, whoa. We don't want to just go in there and attack two slumbering Bahirs. We want to go in, if we're going to go in there and wake them up, we got to have a good reason. Maybe we can talk to them or something like that. Because there's a lot of monsters and stuff in here that are here against their will. So let's do that instead. So good thinking prevailed there. And they decided that they're going to group up together and send out sort of a diplomacy party out there to go and talk to the Bahir, see what they might learn, and if things turn south, then they can hightail it out of there, basically. In a large group, they figured if it turns really bad, then they have more of a chance. So my table agreed to joining up with this particular table. So they abandon all all thoughts of doing whatever with the trolls. I said, all right, screw it. Let's just go back up there. So this is the first time, I think, that, as far as I know, that any of the tables have ended up combining, with the exception, of course, of the first session that was already sort of pre-programmed to do that.
Yeah, that's, and we've talked about this on the podcast before. As much as we've been trying to encourage the groups to either mix and match players where a need has been identified, or to possibly team up for a bigger encounter, nobody has done this. So I'm surprised it took 9 weeks before this happened, but I know this turned out really well. So I'm glad it happened, and I'm glad it worked.
So the tables got together. They were getting it set up. We had one of the players getting the map ready. He loves to draw out the maps for this, so he was getting it set up. And in the meantime, I sat just aside with the other DM and said, all right, listen, we sort of discussed this is what's happening. This is what the behaviors sort of set, because I mean, it gives you a little bit of information about their mind frame, but it doesn't really give you a whole lot of information beyond that. So we came up with something really quick to say, you know, basically, he's going to roleplay one of them, I'll roleplay the other one, we'll see how it goes from there. If the players do this, this is how react, if they do this, this is how react, and blah, 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 that kind of thing, right? But we, of course, we wanted to encourage the roleplay, and knowing that the Behirs were, they're evil of some sort, I'm not sure if they're chaotic evil, or are they
lawful? I think they're lawful evil.
Lawful evil, okay, yeah, that sounds right. Regardless, so basically, and now these things are level 16, too, if I'm remembering correctly.
They're pretty tough, yeah. They're certainly,
they're level 16. They're extremely.
They're in the upper end of the monster. Like, there's a handful of monsters in this dungeon that, under normal circumstances, if a party of this level ever encountered, they shouldn't have a prayer of defeating. The fact there's two Behirs there, this is clearly one of, I would say, probably in the top five, but definitely in the top 10 toughest creatures in the dungeon.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you see a lot of these higher end monsters in the dungeon, but usually they're young or they're weakened or whatever, which means you have to reduce a lot of their stats by half. In this case, nope, these are just straight up Behirs. No screwing around. So the players were deciding how they're going to deal with this situation. Now, it's at some point here where a player from Derek's table came over to ask my player, who had the circlet, a question about one of the zones.
About the blood pools.
Yeah, about the blood pools. So I do recall hearing blood pool talk, but I was also at the same time plotting out with the other DM how we're going to handle the situation. And I was like, you know what? This player's got it. He's going to answer him. This player, who he's getting the information from now, has missed a lot of the details, has missed a lot of the sort of fine nitty-gritty details that have gone through. So he gave them the information as he remembered. he told them as he recalled it happening. He made assurances. And I don't even know what he said. Yeah, I just know he made some assurances that things would be fine. And I even remember a double check from your player, Derek, from the table,
player
table. Double checking, are you sure? Yep, everything is good to go. See you later. And that was it. I didn't think twice about it. I was like, okay, he's got it. Fine. So that came back later on to bite him in the butt. But but anyway, coming back to what was going here, basically, the players had finally settled, okay, here's the four that we're going to send out there to go talk to the sleeping beasts. So they used the Hunter's Veil. It was a group of four of them that made their way out there. They were well hidden. They wouldn't be found by the Behirs once they woke up, but they would be heard. So basically, they spoke loudly so they could wake up the Behir. What had happened was that the Behirs immediately wake up, and of course they wake up and they're hungry. It's food time. But one thing is that the Behirs are also very bored, because it's just sort of the same thing in and out, day in, day out here. So to them, it was this, oh, finally something, you know, something new. It's not just like a red wizard here, for example, or something like that, right? It's just something altogether new, and someone's asking us a question, right? So I believe the first thing that they asked was, can you help us kill red wizards? So they had a little bit of a laugh. Well, actually, you know what? I'm forgetting one important part here. They did bring a red wizard that they had tied up and thrown out into the middle of the area, which is a pretty evil act, if you ask me. But one of the characters had presented this as an offering of peace to feed them, of course they were more than happy. They were very amused that they would do this, that whoever these people were that were here that would do something like this. But then they asked, please help us kill some red wizards. You'll get more like this. That just, of course, made them laugh heartily, and they said, "Why would we bite the hand that feeds? You come here offering us this, which is all fine and dandy, but we also like to be fed at certain points, right?" So the characters start to panic. They go, "Oh, this is not going to go well." So basically, we kind of had, me and the other DM had this kind of good cop, bad cop, or I guess good be here, bad be here, going on. So he was playing the bad one, who would always just interject with threats issued towards the players, or alternate suggestions of, "Well, hey, a walking smorgasbord just walked us. Why do we need red wizards when we have you?" Kind of thing, right? So one of the players got terribly frightened in this encounter, and ran away from the group. Unfortunately, he was also the one who was responsible for the Hunter's Veil or whatever was keeping them hidden. So suddenly, all the players were now, the three remaining players were completely visible, which kind of dropped their situation here. But in the middle of this back and forth fight, because now the dragons, or sorry, not the dragons, the Behirs were saying that basically, you're making this offer, but you're here now. We can just kill you and eat you. What's to stop us from doing that? So they were really, they're just toying with them, right? Because the characters were so confident before, and now they're just toying with them. So they eventually ate the red wizard offering that they received, but one of the players really quickly said, "Okay, so I can see that you want to eat something. What if I told you we could get you three delicious, juicy trolls?" So this was someone from my table who, of course, using their head, thought, "Oh, well, there's three trolls down there. What if we can get them up here?" So the Behirs were very much aware of who these trolls were and what the trolls were doing, and they thought, "Hey, you know what? Sure, if you think you can do that, that's great." But at one point, they were even saying that, in order to stop us from killing you now, you have to entertain us, and if we get real bored, we're going to kill you. So one of them was playing. He's like, "I'm going to pull my instrument and start playing." He did a perform check. I'm like, "Oh, great, great. What are you playing?" He's like, "The bagpipes."
So the, like, bagpipes? Where did he get those?
I don't know. But it just made me laugh. I'm like, okay, so one of them doesn't mind the bagpipes, but the other one is finds it very annoying. It was a really weird instrument to have, but whatever. So basically, they were trying all these things to perform, but when someone brought up the idea of bringing the trolls in, they said, "Okay, that's a great idea." And really, I didn't have it so much that they were looking for food; they were just looking more for sport and some fun, right? Because they want to mix up their time, because it's just been them, just the same thing day in, day out. So basically, the character said, "Okay, Gabe, we promise we'll get them for you." And they said, "Okay, we want them here, but we don't want them. We don't want your dragon corpses here, even if you could kill them. We want them alive. We want a little bit of fun. Like, we want to be able to play with them." So the characters agreed to do this, but then they put another restriction on, saying, well, we can't go hungry here, so what's to say that you're going to go down and get the trolls, assumedly, but then just never return to us, right? So we need a safety deposit, so we demand that you leave a certain amount of your players here, and we'll allow a small group of you to go and get what you've promised here. It shouldn't be any trouble for a group as bold as you, basically, right? So the players, I thought this is a great idea. This is a way to make it a little more manageable, bring the one table down of players down, and it'll be a way to mix up the players too, right, from the two tables.
Oh, you didn't just have them split up on their normal...
Nope, I said whoever wants to go can volunteer, and right away one of the players from the other table volunteered along with another one of mine. So a couple of guys from mine, a couple guys from the other said, "We want to do it. Let's go do it."
Nice.
So I was like, "Okay, this is working out great." So the other ones, in the meantime, while they were going down to get the trolls, the other ones had to stay there and keep these behaviors entertained. And should they fail in that, then the consequences could be, in fact, disastrous. So this is, and now and they're like, "Okay, so, but if we do this, you'll kill red wizards for us?" And they said, "No." Again, why would we bite the hand that feeds? We basically, what we'll do is we'll let you live. So they're like, "Oh, okay, well, I guess we're not really in a position to bargain that much further. But, you know, they sweetened the pot a little, and they said, maybe we can give you a little bit of information that might make it worth your while so you don't walk away completely empty-handed. So basically, the party that broke off from this giant group now, I took them back to my table here and brought them down. They went in. One of them was a monk, and he had, like, massive speed, so they let him take the lead. The other players waited in the room with the gray pool, the gray light pool. So the monk went down into the room with the trolls, just immediately just walked out, got their attention. He launched a couple of crossbow bolts their way and got their ire, and as they gave chase, he just ran up right into the next room, stopped, waited for them to show up. When they finally caught up, launched a couple of attacks at them, took off. The other players started backing up with him. As the trolls, however, as they got close to the end of the Great Pool room, and this would have been going into the Bahir lair, the head troll, the one that was in the lead, the way I describe it is that they suddenly, their pace really slows, and they start to peek around the corner, and you see the one in the front, his ears just kind of go down, and he kind of, it almost sounds as if he cowers. He just turns around and starts going back, and they start talking amongst themselves. And the one again, the new player that was there, he was also part of this crew. He could hear that they were saying, "It's not worth it. They're going to the Bahirs. We don't want to get involved here, right?" So I made them sound extra stupid too. So they were walking away, and they're like, "Oh crap! What are we gonna do?" So they started, you know, shooting a couple of arrows. One tried to launch a javelin at them. They took the hits, and they were not happy about it, but they decided it was best to just go back because they could clearly see that they're being dragged into a terrible situation. So the wizard, and again, this is a new player, so he came out, he's like, "You know what? This is terrible. I'm going to go out and demand the attention of, and mind you, he's a wizard, right? So this is, like, not a good situation for him. I'm going to go there and say,
He must have been taking notes from the wizards in my group.
Right? So he's like, no, you're not going anywhere. So he got right, well, not in melee range, but got, like, within 20 feet, I believe, of the troll that was closest, which was kind of like the head troll, basically. Now, so he asks, "I want to use Charm Person on him. Can I do that?" So this is supposed to be a humanoid creature. Trolls, kind of humanoid. They're large. But you know what? I was like, this is a cool idea what he's got, and it's going to work out wonderfully. I'm not going to, like, you know, it may be a legit thing to do, but I was like, I'm not going to bother. Like, this is the rule of cool situation. I'm totally going to let this happen. I'll let them, you know, make their saving throws, or let him, sorry, make his saving throw, and if it works, it works. So these things are really stupid. They're not terribly wise, anyhow. They have a negative perception. They rolled his DC, I believe, which was 15, and they rolled a 15. However, he had minus one, so the total was 14. Therefore, he failed the save, and now he regarded this wizard as a close friend. And we had a little bit of fun with that, where, you know, again, because the character is playing this this intelligent elf wizard, whereas the troll is this really dopey, sort of dumb warrior, very primal instinct kind of creature, right? And he was like, "Oh, you're my best friend," slapping him on the back and, you know, knocking him back 5 feet kind of thing, right? So we had a little bit of fun with that when they were laughing around. So the other two trolls were kind of confused and nervous. They didn't know what was going on. He said, no, this is good. You guys can come and you can feel safe. This guy's a close friend. We can trust him. So they came in. They were still unsure. And I mean, you know, I figured he does still know that there's a Bahir in there. So he asks, why are you trying to get us to go in there? He's like, "Well, we see, you know, the Bahirs, we've been fighting them. And slowly but surely, we've whittled them down to a very weakened state. But we need someone mighty to take out, to you know, get the finishing blow, and we thought, you know, you would be the ones to deserve that glory." And of course, they're playing to his sort of vanity, right? And he's just eating it up. He's like, "Oh yeah, great idea," just beating his chest kind of thing. But then he notices the characters are still there. He's like, "Well, why are your friends? Why are they shooting me? Why are they throwing sharp sticks at me?" He said, "Oh, well, you know, it was just trying to get your attention." You know, to tell you the truth, I can't remember what the reasoning was, but it was good enough that he was like, "All right, fine, let's go." Basically, he's like, these guys, they don't really know how to get someone's attention properly, and they thought this was the only way, and I'll chastise them later kind of thing, right? And keep in mind, again, this is a guy that had no history playing D&D at all before, so right away, I was like, this guy's like, he's got it totally, right? He's playing a more complex class that you could pick. And, you know, here he is, like, you know, making a creative use of one of the spells. He looked through the spells and thought, what if I try this? And of course, I wanted to reward it, and here it is. He convinces them, all right, these Bahirs are almost dead. We just need your help to come through. One of the players who saw this taking place, and again, he was translating the giant to the other players, ran back to the room with the Bahirs really quick and said, this is what's happening, guys. We need to set this up. Get those Bahirs up. So the Bahirs agreed to lay down, play dead, or play injured, basically. And after a little bit of time at my table, finally the troll had said, okay, let's go in. Let's go live our moment of glory. And he had this one troll so amped up about it. The other two were still kind of nervously following in, but as soon as they came in, they saw that the two Bahirs appeared to be laying on the ground, and there's other characters, you know, the player characters, casually about them. So they figured, oh, it's true, they weren't lying. This is great. The glory is ours. So the troll that was charmed sent the other two to go attack or to go finish off the other one of the one further away. He's like, I get the glory of killing this one all to myself because I deserve the glory. So that was it. The trolls went off to fight, and the Bahirs waited for it. And I checked out the stats. I made a couple of phony baloney rolls just to make it look like it was big time calculations being done. But basically, I'm like, these trolls are going to get decimated by these creatures, right? So I did a pretty vivid description of this battle that was completely one side. The Bahirs, as soon as they take it, they allow a couple hits, and then they get up to their full glory, showing that clearly these Bahirs are not at all hurt. So, you know, and as I'm describing that, the trolls are being slaughtered, and they're letting them regenerate a little and crawl away. So basically, they're being very evil. They're basically torturing these things and just killing them. So the one troll that was charmed by the other guy's like, what? You lied to me. How could you betray me? And he's like, I just turned invisible. Invisibility. So the trolls end up dying. Now, there was no fire or acid or anything like that, but as you know, these things can swallow these guys up. They're going to tear them into fine pieces, and really, they're not eating them to satiate hunger. I figured that they were looking more for the sport of it, and yeah, basically they were just destroyed. Nice. So I didn't go into too much more than nitty gritty with the regen and stuff, because I just figured, you know, this is kind of a cool situation that turned out this way. And it was also getting close to the end of the night, so everyone had a great time with it, and that's pretty much where we left it off. And the parties decided they're going to split ways from here because they wanted to cover as much ground as they could to get to Black Gates. But my table got back together as the regular table and said, okay, well, we're going to head further south to that troll room because now we know the trolls have been taken care of in there. We're going to go disrupt that Black Gate. And the other group was, I'm not even sure where they were off to. But that's how it ended. But it was a lot of fun. I think this is probably the most fun I've had this season with this particular session, just because how well it worked to have the tables come together and to see like a new player sort of really shine and come up with these really creative ideas like that. And sort of just seeing all the players. I know I talked about that player quite a bit, but all the players had their moment of great ideas and... It was really good, really good unit, I guess, basically. Like, they all worked together as a unit, and I felt like that, you know what, they suffered a TPK last week, and they were a lot more careful this time. They were a lot more, they were thinking more along the lines of, like, ways around situations. That doesn't necessarily mean going and running and charging for a fight, right? So, yeah, it was. I think everyone had a great time, because they were all talking about it well after we were done, so.
Cool. Yeah, no, I heard some of the stories afterwards, because my table finished about 5 minutes before yours, and it certainly sounded exciting. I felt a little jealous I wasn't able to participate in that particular go-about, so... As a side note, the way the store is set up, two of the tables play where the magic players are, so it's always very, very loud, and that's where I've been running my table the last couple of weeks. The other two tables where you and I have typically played are off in a much quieter area of the store. And I know that the last couple of weeks I felt it's been extra tough for the two tables where I am with the magic, because it's been so loud that it's hard for the players to have those um, sessions where they're going to have a lot of interaction. Now, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, there hasn't really been a lot of opportunities to talk to any of the NPCs, but I'm hoping that in the coming weeks there will be, and hopefully the noise factor won't, reduce the likelihood of any of the player characters wanting to try and talk through things with the monsters or trick them or come up with creative plans like that. So we'll see.
Yeah, and basically the Bahirs let them leave with the warning not to come and disturb them again, though, unless they have more entertainment for them. But otherwise, they did give them a little more information, basically saying that basically gave them the information about how to access the phylactery vault, or just a little more detail about it. So yeah, I know some of the groups, I think, knew about it, but some of them didn't, and they hadn't. Not all the tables have talked about those details yet, so I think a lot of this stuff is starting to come together now for the groups.
Yeah.
But I also have to say that someone else, I think from your table again, Derek, came by to visit our circlet-wearing friend after their trip to the Blood Pools. It's like, you lie to us. We're not impressed with you. We're going to come and get you. It was really funny.
Oh, did he make threats? Okay.
Yeah, it was either from your table or another table.
Oh, it was totally from my table, yeah, because they changed the circlet. One of the guys was like, you ask terrible questions. Give me that circlet. I'm going to talk to the group.
I know there was threats levied against him afterwards. They were going to come and get you. He's like, I didn't know. How was I to know? Maybe I was mistaken. It was really funny.
Nice.
So, and I thought that actually, like, it turned out finally like that, but it's also a lesson to, like, pay attention to what's going on, right? Because especially if you want to be the one wearing that circlet.
Yep, for sure. For sure. Well, I think that's probably a good place to call it then for this week. So can you think of anything else you want to add in here before we sign off?
No, I think that about covers it.
Okay, so we've got 3 weeks left. Is that right? Because this was week 9.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah,
so. We're going to have at least one more week of Dungeon Crawl, and then we'll have to figure out, DMs, to put our heads together. Are we going to need 2 sessions for the finale, or do we think we can squeeze it into 1? But we're coming to the wire, and then before you know it, it's going to be Gen Con. So yep. We'll have lots to talk about leading into that. So,
oh, you know what? Speaking of which, actually, I do just want to point one other thing out. One of the things that came up because of all the, of course, everyone's talking about the new basic rules and all that stuff, right? Like we said at the beginning of the show here. But one of the things that I pointed out to my players, and I think maybe people might want to start talking to their players about too, is that, you know, so for you guys coming back and like you have new characters and you have the stuff, a lot of the stuff is pretty loosey-goosey about what's required for your character, what's not, what's this, what's that kind of thing, right? So, like, we're playing it pretty much off the cuff here. There's not really any hard line expectations for a lot of these things. But come next season, there is going to be a guide out there, and you are going to be expected to be following it, right? So, like, even this, something like table size limits and stuff. So that's something that I think there's going to be a little bit of an adjustment period because it hasn't been quite as, I don't want to say stringent, because I don't think it's necessarily going to be stricter, I think, but it's going to be more structured. So
you're talking 2 things here. You're talking adventures. Structure in the sense of there's going to be actual books, and you have to actually follow the new rules, not the play test. But you're also talking about the public play rules, right?
So I'm talking about, because I know they're talking about, oh, well, how much money do I have to create myself? Well, I'm just going to pick a couple of these mundane things. And I just hand wave. I'm like, yep, that's fine, whatever. But just so you know, there's going to be an organized play guide that comes out, and I think it's the end of this month it comes out, and it's going to have guidelines on how to do this stuff, and you're going to be expected to know this stuff, basically, right?
Well, and it's not even so much you're expected to know it. I mean, resources will be available if you
have to look it up. Yeah, sorry, I guess that's the wrong
word. It's more you will be responsible for adhering to it and tracking it yourself on a sheet that you can produce for the Dungeon Master if requested. So for anyone who's been playing Living Forgotten Realms or Living Greyhawk over the years, for those old hats like us, this is nothing new. This is going to be, you know, a new version of the old tricks. It's more for the players. Like, I know at our store, I think there's only 2 or 3 of us that have played Living Forgotten Realms. Most of the players of the 20 to 30 that show up at our store have only started playing D&D since Encounters, and I don't think many of them have done much other public play. I know we did Vault of Dracolich, which, you know, was more of a battle interactive kind of thing, but this is going to be new for a lot of the players, and you're exactly right. I think that some of them may not realize that the record-keeping side of it will become more important than it has been. And there, you know, again, not to sound like a jerk, but there will be consequences if you're not doing what you need to do. If you're trying to, like, one of the guys already said that, where he talked about, earning XP by playing at home or by playing the expedition games. And he's like, well, we can just write in whatever we want, say we've played them. And I, you know, like, I had to give him a look, like, why would you even think to do that? Like, we're here to have fun. Like, you're looking to break the system? Stop coming.
Well, I mean, that's like, why would you say, look, here's all the fake fun I had. Like, part of the fun is playing it. Right? Like, going through those adventures.
Yeah, no, so, yeah, we'll see. So.
But, and another thing, too, is in terms of attendance, I also warned to say that when the new edition launches, there's going to be a lot more interest because it's not just a new season of Encounters. This is the final and proper launch of, like, the Player's Handbook comes out, right? Like, this is the real launch of 5th edition. I expect a lot of places are going to see a sudden surge of people coming in. And again, this goes to that table cap limit. We're only going to have so many tables, right? Like, who knows how many tables we can get and how many DMs we're going to have willing to run it. So it could be if you're not there, you know, you might not be able to get a spot.
And this is something I think we touched on in a previous show that I don't think we should go into too much right now. But how do you determine who sits in if you don't have enough spots? Do you reward the players who have been coming all along? Or do you make sure you have a minimum number of spaces open for new players every week to try and grow your base and to try and bring new people into the hobby? And maybe that's something we try and talk about in one of the upcoming podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely something we're going to have to try and deal with in the intervening weeks between this and the next. But something to at least talk to your players about what to expect. Because next season is going to be a bit of a change, and it could be a little shocking to some people who maybe aren't prepared for it. Like you said, those who started in Encounters and maybe don't have any other organized play experience. But just food for thought.
Yep. Okay, so that's it for episode 9 of Recounting Encounters, Dead and Thay, for D&D Encounters. And next week we'll pick up right where we left off. We'll continue the fun. Hopefully Mark will be back next week and can moderate and help us with all our technical glitches that we had getting ready for this week's recording. Just a reminder, you can visit my website, dungeonsmaster.com. We've got a review of the new 5th edition starter setup. It's pretty even-handed, I think. I mean, I pointed out the good and the bad, and I also put a pretty extensive list of the things that I was immediately able to pick out that had changed from the playtest to the current version. A few of the commenters have pointed out that some of the things I noted are actually from a much older version of the playtest and had already been changed over, but, I mean, if you're lazy, here's a bulleted list of 20 things you may want to watch out for. You can also follow me on Twitter at amaron_DM. And until next week, we will have a blast.
Indeed.